Hi, I'm Laura. I am a veteran of the war in Afghanistan, and I am preparing for deployment to Iraq on the death of a young suicide bomber. He tried to kill my best friend. He was enemy. He was dead. I know how I was supposed to feel, but I still can't muster any wry laughter for this man whose corpse and car bomb are now cool, still, silent. I can see it all when I sleep. Limbs torn from torso like puzzle pieces, uncoiled entrails tumbling out the belly. It isn't true. Nothing was left whole. His clothing, white cotton streaked with blood and shit, clung to the mangled steel in strips, like bandages dressing a giant metal wound. And all around, the pulp of him. And I think of the body of my own son as he grows in the shadow of Fort Bragg, Pope Air Force Base, Camp Lejeune. I think of him asleep in peace, for he has no nightmares of war to interfere. I want to still the gunfire, the bombs, the soldiers' chants, and say, "Hush now, world. A child is sleeping." And if you must use words like martyr and infidel or hero and enemy, then whisper them. It's also desperately fragile, so easy to destroy. A clotted mess of protein in the bottom of the pan. A brown-red stain soaking into dust.
And that is our opening for Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. A little different than what you're normally used to. A cheery voice coming on, inviting you to stay tuned. And I am still inviting you to stay tuned because we're going to take a look at something that we don't look at very often. And that is the people who are involved in the various conflicts around the world. We're focusing, of course, on a specific movie, and we have the producer in studio with us, Bill McMillan, who is joining us to talk about this movie and the project. The movie is called The Welcome, and it's about a project, Bill, if I'm correct, that took place in 2008, and I'm hoping that it continued beyond, that it was an ever-going project, to help those who become involved in these various military conflicts to come to grips with who and what they are and what they've experienced, and hopefully to enlighten us as those who have never seen combat to understand and better appreciate them for what they have gone through. In other cultures in history, they've done that. The warriors come home from battle, win or lose, and they're taken care of. But for some reason in this country, we're not doing that. I want to welcome you to our program.
Thanks, Richard. It's good to be here.
I want to find out, first of all, how you became involved with this project. Obviously, producing this documentary that's being shown around the country, it's, to say the very least, I mean, it's an understatement to say that it's provocative and it hits you where you live. And just that opening poem by Laura Carpenter describing her experiences with the people, the men and women that she fought with. Some of the people that I saw in the movie talking about their experiences of trying to preserve life and having to take life and what that's all about and the conditions under which they had to live and quote-unquote work. I mean, that was their job. Have you ever served in the military?
No, I haven't. My wife, Kim Shelton, who's the director of this film and co-produced this with me, we got into this because we were watching what was happening in 2007, 2006, and things falling apart in Iraq. And we're civilians, and we wanted to get involved in some way. And at that time, it didn't seem like there was any way for civilians to be involved. It was just a mess that was coming back that most of us didn't know anything about. So we decided to get involved, and we created a program called the Welcome Home Project.
Now, this has nothing to do with any positions taken on any of the conflicts that we as Americans happen to be involved with. This is taking a position on the people the human lives that are involved in whatever the conflict is, for whatever the reason, and they're returning home.
Right. We decided, I mean, like everyone else, we have our political views, but we decided that that would simply be a distraction, and we were more concerned about people. Mm-hmm. And in particular, we really wanted to see how we could bring these people that are coming home. They're not soldiers. They're not political creatures. They are men and women that, you know, they're our neighbors, brothers, sisters, husbands, wives, children. They were coming home. We wanted to see how we could reconnect them with the communities they come back to. And so that's what we did with the Welcome Home Project in Ashland, Oregon.
And in watching these 24 people participate in this, what was it, week-long?
Mm-hmm. Five days.
Shall we say encounter group? Okay. Or experience, if you will. Obviously, they began to learn and grow and know each other more intimately as they went along. They began to understand where the other was coming from. They were able to share where they were coming from. And whether they walked away agreeing or disagreeing wasn't really the point. It was the healing process.
That's right. And we hooked this up with a guy named Michael Mead, who led this retreat. Mm-hmm. And he is a mythologist and a storyteller. So unlike encounter groups that are basically tied to some kind of psychological approach, mm-hmm. what we wanted to do was to offer an opportunity for the veterans and their family members. It's not just vets. Everybody that's connected to them is part of this.
Right.
So we had family members there as well. We wanted to give them an opportunity to understand that their experience fits into a much wider way of being on this planet. There have been wars forever. There have been ways of dealing with it forever. And Mead is brilliant. He uses mythology and stories to help put them in a much wider context so that their personal struggle isn't maybe as devastating in a way. And it gives it an opportunity to be described in a way that's more poetic, that's kind of more universal than just my personal struggle with what I brought back.
Well, now he weaves into it, of course, the mythology. And I remember in the beginning of the movie, he talks about, as I mentioned at the front end of the program here, the fact that civilizations passed that go to war, get into conflicts. When their warriors come home, obviously, if they've won the battle, they're celebrated and so forth. Even if they've lost, when they come home, at least they're taken care of. They're comforted. They're helped through. I don't know if there's a healing process directly, but...
I think it's a better way to put it is not that they're helped through, but that they are seen as being a more integral part of the culture they return to.
Okay, that's, yeah.
And they come back. It is understood that they come back with a certain level of wisdom and understanding about life and death that most of us don't have to deal with. So mm-hmm. they come back with a place in more traditional cultures, certainly not all of them, but they tend to come back in a place where they're held in, they have a role, they have a purpose, they have a reason for being, and they get to be that when they get back.
Now, I found it rather extraordinary as I'm hearing the experiences that they've gone through in this woman's poem, Laura Carpenter, that some of them were there in that weekend or in that 5 days who were also going to be going back. And one of the thoughts that ran through my mind was, after all that you've experienced, why would you put yourself through that again, that horrific experience? I mean, and I'm only hearing the words. You right. went through it, and yet you're going back? I don't understand.
Well, it's a complicated question. I mean, she was in the military, and what is going on with these wars in particular, because we have a volunteer army, is that when they sign up, they're there to do what the bidding of the government.
Right, right.
And so, as I'm sure most of your listeners know, many of the people that are going to Iraq and Afghanistan have been there many times, many different tours of duty there. And Laura is just one example of somebody who was about to go back. The whole question of stop loss, and just if your career is in the military and you yeah. are required to go possibly even to Libya these days, that's what you do. Or you decide to fight the army, and that's not an easy path.
Did you see those kinds of struggles between personal survival and loyalty and duty to God and country, if you will. Were there any kinds of conflicts like that throughout that kind of a weekend and with these folks?
There were intense conflicts over just about anything you could imagine.
I mean,
what we're looking at is a room full of people with post-traumatic stress.
Mm-hmm.
And that is... that includes the family members, because if they've been living with somebody who is dealing with, you know, violent memories or with nightmares or with suicidality or depression or drug and alcohol abuse, all of these people are living in that mm-hmm. stuff. And so all of them are affected by it. And the politics of this did not escape this particular retreat. There were intense conflicts. The political stances, there were people there from Veterans for Peace, which is a national organization of veterans that specifically rally and, you know, lobby for peace. And then there were other people from the military whose belief is that the government says what they should do. They need to do it. It's their military duty. It's their patriotic duty. And so that kind of split was just as much on this retreat as it is in the rest of the culture. So,
mm-hmm.
yeah, there were lots of conflicts. I mean, it was a very intense 5 days.
Yeah.
And the film captures some of that, but it also moves beyond that to something that's more fundamentally human to these 24 people that actually is true for all of us. So the film in some ways is about these 24 people, and it's a, you know, it's just kind of an interesting window into an intense life that most of us don't have to deal with, but
right.
it's more connected to our own emotional response to it and to people's pain and people's joy and hope and all of that stuff. So It's a complicated subject.
And it is very much so. One of the reasons why I decided to to take a look at this on this program is because Tell Me Your Story is about new paradigms for a new world. And obviously, we haven't been doing a very good job of incorporating certain segments of our society into society. Whether it be those who fight in whatever battles and military conflicts, what have you, that their government says they should go fight, or the homeless, or and then we can start going down and start dividing, dividing it up. And so I felt that it was important to talk about this from the standpoint that these are not just American citizens; these are human beings. Matter of fact, one of them was not an American citizen, but he was there in the retreat. And he was talking about maybe becoming an American citizen.
Oh, right. Niels Dahmen is a Dutch citizen.
Yes.
Who originally joined the military wanting to fight as part of the UN forces around the country. And I can't remember why exactly he came to the United States, but he's not an American citizen. There are a lot of people in the military now who are fighting these wars who are not American citizens.
Yeah. But they're people. They're human beings.
They're people.
Just like you and me.
Right.
Who have gone through a traumatic, horrific experience and that you and I can only just barely get a glimpse of from their expressions, be they poetry or music or what have you. We need to find ways of bridging those gaps to embracing everybody into the human family so that we can survive. You know, because these, you know, we start bringing up the political issues on either side, as you were saying, you know, mm-hmm. you had those intense conflicts throughout the weekend, throughout the retreat, and yet they all stayed.
Right. And, you know, we were when we first started putting this together, we Kim and I live in Ashland, Oregon, where this took place. And Ashland has a reputation for being kind of like Berkeley up in Southern Oregon. It's very, very liberal and a lot of hippies and a lot of art and Shakespeare, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
And we were warned that having this in Ashland, Oregon would prevent others from coming to it because people wouldn't want to come to such a liberal place. It's very conservative outside of Ashland.
Okay.
And what we decided to do was when the Oregon Shakespeare Festival donated their biggest theater to us to help make this possible, on the last day they all came to the theater and presented their poetry. State-of-the-art, amazing theater, and they gave it to us for free with all of the technical advisors and everything else in there. The reason we wanted to do it that way was because we wanted to use the whole subject of veterans and the whole humanity of the veterans to try and bring all these different kinds of, I don't know, you know, philosophies, religions, conservative, liberal, everything, mm-hmm. together in one place around an issue that none of us can argue with, the well-being of these people who have gone to war in our name, whether we like the wars or not.
Right.
These guys are fighting in our name and our taxes and everything else pay for it. And so we wanted to put together a program that actually just transcended all that junk and touched on what is truly human about all of us, and that is an empathetic response to pain. And an empathetic response to loyalty, and an empathetic response to the reality of somebody's experience that's so different than ours that we can feel. And these guys were awesome, unbelievable courage to do this. One of the primary descriptions of post-traumatic stress is isolation. People leave. They can't deal with triggers, and mm-hmm. they want to pull away, and they don't. Often want to be in public. They want to, you know, kind of take care of themselves, because if they get triggered, it's an incredibly difficult thing for them.
Yeah.
And so for these guys to come together in a room with a bunch of people they didn't know, with a leader that wasn't going to be doing this like they may have met at the VA, with stories and rituals and et cetera, and with the idea that there was going to be a two-camera film crew there with them the whole time, and then that they were actually going to get up on stage at the end of this thing and present their own personal stuff. Mm-hmm. These guys are not professionals.
Right.
Took just unbearably amazing courage on their part. And so it's a really uplifting movie, even though it is a very painful one.
Yeah.
And our intention with the movie is to use it around the country to inspire people.
Yeah.
Not just to raise the awareness about post-traumatic stress, or not just to, you know, give veterans a place to speak, which they need. But, I mean, those things are necessary. But we really want to bring this whole community of the United States together in a different way, and that's how we hope the film will get. It's a pretty ambitious plan.
I was going to say it because there are those of us who are about the process, and some of us have admitted it as much, who want to change the world,
mm-hmm.
and we know that we can't do it alone, and so we need everybody to get in and get involved in whatever way they choose to. To start being more inclusive, understanding that if it has to go down to the basics, when we all cut our skin, we all bleed the same red blood. Might be different types, but it's still the same red blood. So we're united in that respect. If that's where we have to begin, then that's where we'll begin.
Well, and that's our hope. I mean, I think this show is going to run after we do this, but mm-hmm. on Thursday night this week, we're going to show the film in Santa Barbara. And I'm anticipating that there will be, you know, a lot of veterans in the audience, a lot of different politics between them, and then whatever politics come in with the civilian community here. And what will happen, I'm pretty sure, is that at the end of the movie, there will simply be a lot of emotion in the room. It won't be about politics.
Right.
And so, really, that's the hope, is to transcend the mess that we keep arguing about, because that's not helping people. It's not helping us. It's not helping vets.
No.
It's not helping the country, obviously.
this took place over basically 5 days.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious, from a technical standpoint, how long did it take you and your wife to finally put this together into the film that it is in today?
Well, we started organizing the retreat and pulling all those pieces together in mid-2007. And it took us until the end of May. This happened on Memorial Day 2008, to get the whole town behind it, to get the money and everything else needed to put it on, to get all of the venues, et cetera. And then, most difficult of all, to get all the veterans there. Right. It took until the end of May in 2008. And since that time, our effort has been totally around trying to get the movie finished, raising mm-hmm. funds for it. I'm producing it, so I've been trying to raise money for it, and my wife has been working on the editing of it for since
that time.
You're talking
5 days of material. I know, that's a lot of material.
It's a lot. Actually, it's relatively small for a documentary film. You can have hundreds of hours.
But it's all very intense.
Yeah.
So it's like, I like that, and I like this, but...
Well, my hat is off to Kim, and the primary editor is a guy named Josh Peterson. They just did an incredible job. And, obviously, I'm a little biased.
Yeah.
I mean, you saw the film. You can make your own descriptions of
it.
Well,
first of all, I didn't realize it was only two cameras. I could have sworn there were more cameras there. Mm. Just because of the number of shots, it just seemed... but obviously, that's in the whole creative process and editing. And I thought, boy, why aren't some of the cameramen getting caught in some of these shots? You know, that's why I thought there were more.
They're pros.
They are very good. And the other thing, too, was that they didn't seem to even be noticed by the 24.
Right.
It's like they were fortunately, obviously, totally ignored.
Well, they were, it took a little while for that to settle in,
yeah.
Of course. And I remember the first night there was one time when somebody asked for the cameras to be turned off. There was a conflict right away. And they asked for the camera to be turned off for just a minute. And I believe that was the only time in the 5 days that happened. And that says something about the professionalism and just the particular qualities of the camera crew, a guy named Andy Black and Lee Kimball, the two people that were doing the camera. And Loretta Molitor did the sound. So she's walking around with a big microphone mm-hmm. and all that. But it also says something about what I think is really fundamental, which is that these guys want their story to be heard.
Yeah, yeah.
And they knew that this is an opportunity that is not going to come again and that may not come for almost any other veteran to actually be able to tell their story in a way that's going to be heard by the civilian community out there. So we're aiming this at the civilian community as well as all the veterans organizations and peace organizations, et cetera, because it comes from the heart. This is
yeah.
about the soul. And
yeah.
as Michael Mead talks about, poetry is the language of the soul. And so that's one of the ways that these messages are presented to us.
Yeah. I'm hoping maybe one day we'll have him on the program as well. Let me ask you, first of all, obviously you said this began mid-2007, at least the planning stages and mm-hmm. what have you. How did you go about determining what would be done throughout the 5 days, the plan, the progress, the forward motion, the steps?
Well, that was really Michael Mead's work. I mean, he's brilliant. This is what he does. He works with traumatized communities, from gang kids to street kids and prisoners and Indians on reservations. He works with communities that have been destroyed or are really struggling. And so he put this together. It was his energy that tied it all together. We just knew he was the right guy to do it. And mm-hmm. so we contacted him to bring him into it at the very beginning. And then he and his organization, which is called the Mosaic Multicultural Foundation, were co-sponsors of the May event. Mm. So he was part of this from the beginning.
Now, the retreat that took place Memorial Day weekend 2008, has that been continued? Is there or were there even plans to continue it after this initial 5 day experience?
Originally, we thought we might do this several times in different local localities in Southern Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
But we got caught up in, the economy collapsed and fundraising, et cetera. We just ended up doing all of our focus on getting the film done.
Mm-hmm.
And since we were the ones that organized it, nobody else stood up and carried that on. However, Michael organized a couple of other ones.
Mm-hmm.
One was using all of these vets or a bunch of the vets that are in this movie. They did they just redid some of their poetry up at a beautiful venue up in Portland one weekend. And then they actually organized another 5 day retreat that was done up near Portland. And that was done in 2008, I think, 2009.
It's an extraordinary experiment and experience for anybody to go through. But it seems to me, and I'm sure that Michael would agree, that you would have to, it all has to be very gentle because you mentioned before that a lot of these vets, they don't want to be shocked,
right?
And so forth. This whole process is a very gentle healing process, a very gentle, shall we say, welcoming process.
Well, that's certainly the idea behind it.
Mm-hmm.
And there are many other organizations these days doing retreats. So there are a lot of different ways to do retreats, and they do require people to understand what they're doing. You can't just throw this together. And,
right.
What we did was particularly ambitious because we wanted to include the community in it. And what is typical of what's typical of traditional cultures is that while the men, usually the men, are off at war, the community is back home preparing for them to return.
Right.
And they're doing dances, they're creating art, they're painting, they are preparing themselves for this return. And so a lot of what our effort was, which is different than what's going on probably anywhere else in the country, is that we were including the whole community for months before this came about. So they were prepared on the last day when these guys came into town, they were prepared for something quite profound to happen.
Mm.
And I mean, as prepared as you can be, because this is kind of coming out of left field.
Well, exactly. This is all ad lib.
But they were ready for it. And mm-hmm. so they were open to what was coming back.
Yeah.
And so when and using mythology as a way to kind of get below our kind of usual defenses, they could hear about bodies being blown up like Laura talks about in mm-hmm. that poem. The public could hear about that without recoiling because they are in the underworld in a sense.
Yeah.
So all of this had been, we had gone ahead and done it this way. That was the plan. And one of the hopes that we have with this film is that we'll encourage local communities to try and put on something of their own. It doesn't have to be this.
Right.
This was pretty ambitious, mm-hmm. But anybody, if Kim and I could pull this together, anybody could do it, but it took a lot.
Yeah.
And it doesn't need to be that ambitious to include the public in what's going on with vets. And from a healing standpoint, as opposed to what the VA tends to do, which is to focus on the symptoms of PTSD or traumatic brain injuries or whatever, with drugs and with behavior treatments and things like that, trying to get rid of the symptoms or at least make them manageable.
Yeah.
What we're really looking at is a much more fundamental kind of healing,
yeah,
which has to do with making some purpose and place for these guys back in the community. They have a role. And one of the things that's come about from this is that the older veterans here, the Vietnam veterans in particular, some of them have become really involved as mentors and as organizers and things like that because of this retreat.
Yeah.
And they have stepped into their role. They see their place now, which they certainly didn't get when they got back from Vietnam, most of them.
Right.
So, the idea here is that there's something very profound that can happen in terms of providing a sense of purpose and value in the community.
That's one of the focuses that we have here on this program, is trying to help people to find their life's purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And though I know there are some who feel that their life's purpose is to serve in the military, serve their country in that way, there are others who do it for whatever the reasons may be, but it's not their life's purpose. They've sort of been sidetracked, and now they've had this experience that unless they can work through it, unless they can come home from it, come back from it, they'll never find their life's purpose. And so that's really what you folks are all about. And to me, that's extraordinary. That has to be an extremely difficult path to go down for you and the people around you in terms of taking on these people who have had these incredible experiences. I mean, I can't even imagine what it must be like to have to work with somebody who can't cope in normal society. Well, how do you integrate them back into society if they can't cope with it? How do you? What are the processes? And again, I'm sure Michael has a better insight as well.
Yeah, Michael certainly would have his take on it, and so.
But
would,
I mean, for you, it's
and
still
so
daunting.
So would many veteran people that are working with veterans now. From our standpoint, that's only a part of the story, though.
Okay.
The other part of it is touching the civilian community in such a way that they're receptive.
So now we have to prepare the
yes,
civilian community.
That's right. There's a lot being said these days about reintegrating the veterans. There are reintegration programs. Mm-hmm. There are reintegration programs all over the place, and the different service branches have all their different kinds of reintegration programs. What also needs to be going on, and what we're hoping this will be, is a kind of reintegration of the public, that the film can be used to take all of us to a different place.
Mm.
Because what these guys are bringing back isn't just theirs. It's not just their problem.
Mm-hmm.
They come back and they have kids, or they have a spouse, and the divorce happens, which is skyrocketing with these guys, or suicide or depression or any of those kinds of things. All of those things affect, say, the kids, their children. And if any of your listeners are Vietnam veteran children, you know, children of Vietnam vets, mm-hmm. for example, they've been living the effects of that war on themselves for 40 years now. And so what we're looking at is a really wide public issue. This is not just about veterans.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just about how they get their help. It's about how all of us are affected by it. All of us are touched by it. This culture has gone to sleep, you know. We don't want to feel this stuff, so.
That does seem to
that's
be the
unhealthy.
Case. I mean, if we're not expressing those things that are going on inside of us, then they bottle up and then they manifest in very unhealthy and unsocialized ways.
Right. And that our in some ways our culture is built to try and make that happen, you know. We're supposed to buy stuff, not feel. And we're hoping people feel better, feel more.
We're going to take a short break here, and when we come back, I'm going to play a piece of music that's available up on the Welcome Home website, and it's welcome. Actually, it's thewelcomethemovie.com,
right?
Where people can see the trailers, they can find out about where it's showing, they can actually purchase the DVD, but they'll also be able to hear a piece of music that I actually pulled down, and it's actually it's entitled "Don't Forget About Me." And we'll talk a little bit about that as we continue here on Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan. Stay with us.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand you.
I grew up on a farm with fields of green that stretched for miles into the sun. Still hear my daddy telling me, son, freedom doesn't come for free. It took a while to learn what those words mean. And now, a million miles away, I look out on a land as gray and cold as stone. Just doing what I'm told, 'cause that's the job I chose. And now I know what Dad's words really mean. But oh my God, the suffering I've seen. Don't forget about me, 'cause I'm still here just doing what I know. And I was proud to go, but God knows how I'm missing you tonight. Don't forget about me. When you close your eyes tonight, you'll be right here next to me. And someday soon I'll be coming home. Tell my son that I'll be home, and pretty soon he and I'll be playing ball. Tell my daughter don't be scared, tell her daddy's still right here. Someday I will walk her down the aisle, but daddy's gotta stay at work a while. Baby, don't forget about me, 'cause I'm still here just doing what I know. And I was proud to go, but God knows how I'm missing you tonight. Don't forget about me. When you close your eyes tonight, you'll be right here next to me. And someday soon I'll be coming home to you. I ain't no hero, don't think I don't get scared. But then I close my eyes and I see. That's the thing that always gets me through. I've got my brothers back, and I know each one of them would give their life for me. It's a small price to pay for the life we live each day. It's my job, and someone has to go. I've got no regrets, just paying what I owe. But don't forget about me, 'cause I'm still here just doing what I know. And I was proud to go, but God knows how I'm missing you tonight. Don't forget about me, one day I'll come walking through that door. You won't cry no more, and I really will be there right next to you. 'Cause one day, pray this fighting will be through.
Don't forget about me. This is Tell Me Your Story. I'm Richard Dugan, your host, and we're in studio with the producer of The Welcome. And you can see trailers and find out more about The Welcome, the documentary, at thewelcomethemovie.com. And it is a very powerful film. I think that regardless of your perspective, you may actually even set your perspective aside. It goes much deeper, much, much deeper than what you think. And we were chatting here as the song was playing, Bill, about preparing the civilian population, that yes, there are all these wonderful programs for the veterans of whatever conflict, but the civilians aren't doing anything to prepare themselves to receive these people back into society and allow them to share what they have so that we don't have these explosions throughout the country where somebody has bottled up all of that PTSD and it goes off in very uncivilized ways.
Yeah, it's true. And I think that what we found out, Kim and I, when we were first organizing this, we didn't know that the public would be in the least bit interested. But when we started talking to friends and to other people around Southern Oregon about what we were doing, we were overwhelmed with the response. People wanted to be able to do something. They wanted to have some sense of involvement with veterans. They wanted to even feel some of the pain that was coming home.
These are from all of the different agendas and perspectives.
All different agendas. And it certainly wasn't everybody.
Sure,
but
sure.
We were overwhelmed with how many people wanted to participate in some way. Therapists offered us their time. Shakespeare gave us the festival, you know, thousands of dollars worth of time and technical, et cetera, and just in that place alone. What we found was that the public wants to participate. They want more involvement. Mm-hmm. They actually, I believe, want to feel what's coming. But for the most part, we don't know how to do it, and we're afraid of it. You know, we think if we talk to a veteran, we're going to, you know, if we talk to, say, a Vietnam vet who's on the street and a homeless, if we start talking to him, it's like, oh, my God, everything's going to come out, or he might go postal, or I'm going to say something wrong, and I'm, you know, so all those kinds of doubts about what our role is come up. What we found is that if you give people a way to express themselves and participate in some way, that they jump for it. And I think that could happen all over the country if people start to pay attention to it that way. And really, all they need is a nudge. If you give them a direction and a nudge, I think people will do it. There are ways to get involved with, I don't know, mentoring the children of veterans. There are ways to get involved with, say, adopting the family of somebody who's over, who's been deployed and is in Iraq. You can, I mean, just by calling in and saying, hey, how you doing? You know, I mean, there are ways to get involved that are really simple and don't take very much that actually are incredibly, I think they make people feel pretty good.
How has this project changed you?
Well, it's a good question. Well, I'm on the radio. I'm a pretty quiet person, actually. I've never been a public speaker or anything like that. And one of the things that's happened is I've been doing things like this. I've done quite a few radio things. I've become much less afraid to ask people to be involved in one way or another. I think maybe the most important change that's happened for me is that I do not feel intimidated by the subject or by being in the presence of veterans. Because I know I used to feel like, man, if I'm around a Vietnam vet, they're going to look at me like, I didn't do it, I wasn't there, you know, or all that kind of weird stuff, which I think most men of my generation, your generation, feel, whether they, especially if they didn't go, there's something left over from that for all of us.
Yeah.
And for me to get involved has really helped me personally to just see these guys as people and that they are happy. They are ecstatic that civilians are actually paying attention, and especially Vietnam vets. They did not have that experience when they came home. And to have, you know, a bunch of do-gooder people actually paying attention and doing something that's having an impact, to them it's a gift, and they're very happy about it. I haven't met anybody yet who thought we were wrong for doing what we're doing.
Well, I thank you for putting this project together and making it available to us through thewelcomethemovie.com, and for sharing the story of this extraordinary experience that we all can participate in whatever form we choose. And I would certainly recommend people go see the movie.
Great. Thanks a lot, Richard. I sure appreciate it.
And again, the best place for them to go is that website,
thewelcomethemovie.com. Right.
Great. Any projects in the works in the near future?
No, we're just working on showings around the country. We've got several of them coming up, including in Santa Barbara, but I'll be gone by the time people hear this.
Sure, but I'm sure you'll be back, and I wouldn't be surprised if you don't have some special events coming up around the significant holidays of Memorial Day and 4th of July, Veterans Day, and Flag Day, and those types of things as well.
Definitely
sure
our plan.
Significant. Yeah. Thanks.
So we're just getting started with
absolutely.
It,
so. Well, thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you, Richard.
I'm Richard Dugan, and I thank you for joining us here on Tell Me Your Story. Hope that you will make a point to check out thewelcomethemovie.com. That is the website, and we will be linked to it as well. I'm Richard Dugan, and this has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We come your way every Saturday from 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific Time. We stream live on the Internet, and we archive these programs at richarddugan.com. Until next Saturday at this same time, love, Talal.